There are apps that track how much water we drink. There's also the idle alert. It vibrates when you have been sitting still for 20 minutes.
For the past few years, Natasha Dow Schull has wandered the aisles at the gigantic Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, keeping an eye out for the latest in self-tracking technology. She's a cultural anthropologist at MIT, and what she sees is not just an emerging market. It's a whole new personal relationship with technology, which includes some pretty bizarre new inventions.
It's called the Pavlok, which is a play on Pavlov, obviously, and it's a wristband linked to your cell phone. It's the same technology as cattle prods, and you can tell it, you know, if I'm browsing too long on Facebook, zap me.
The one I read about that really knocked me out is the thing called the Happy Fork.
So the Happy Fork is an easy one to make fun of. It's a fork that will measure how long you're chewing for in between bites. And if that duration is less than, I believe, 10 seconds, it will kind of buzz and oscillate in your hand. And the instructions say, if your Happy Fork starts to vibrate, do not panic. Set it down next to your plate. And when it glows green again, it will be safe to start eating once again. I mean, some people swear by it and they can review retrospectively at the end of the week their chewing and meal habits.
So this is a way to outsource willpower, seems like. I mean, instead of setting a goal, you know, reducing your calorie intake or spending less time on Facebook, you have a gadget that basically prods you into keeping to your resolutions.
Yeah, I think outsourcing willpower is a great way to see it. And I do remember even reading a quote in a piece that was done, I believe, in Forbes about this technology. And the designer in question said, why do we need to waste our willpower on all of these tiny, tedious, obvious little things? Let's free up our, you know, willpower bandwidth for bigger, more consequential decisions and, you know, let this technology help regulate us in all these little pesky ways.
Wow. So I'll be the first to admit that I'm not a person who tracks things. But even if I did, this seems like information overload. I mean, I read that you talked with someone from one of these companies who said that her product gathers about 5,000 data points a minute off of the body. I mean, what do you even do with all of that? What's it for?
Well, it's interesting you say that because the latest thinking is that rather than showing people numbers all the time, you only get in touch with them about it when there's something important. A great example of this would be the new wave of weighing scales. So to us, it makes sense that you get on a scale so that you can see your number.
Mm-hmm.
But these new scales aren't going to show numbers.
That's a relief.
Right. They may just have little voices that say, have a nice day. And what that means is nothing to waste your cognitive bandwidth on or your willpower. Go about your day. Everything's fine. I will only bother you if there's a significant error signal in your weight that you should know about. So there's a new wave of products that just kind of run in the background. Maybe you sign on to them. You might set up the initial parameters, how much it'll ask little questions, how much do you want to know, when do you want to know it. And then you just let it run and go about your life, trusting that it will be collecting this continuous data and it will tell you if there's something important for you to know.
So you spent some time with members of the Quantified Self movement. Tell me about them.
So members of the Quantified Self movement tend to be more of the kind of techno-libertarian, geeky sort. A lot of men, a lot of engineers. It's a very DIY kind of community where you give show and tells that are 15 minutes and you need to say, what did you track? How did you track it? What did you learn? And you share that with the community.
What do people track?
They track everything from the quality and number of their orgasms to their water intake, their sleep, their moods. And typically what they're trying to do, and this is something that the Apple Watch is also trying to do, is find patterns, detect patterns, and draw correlations across two or more data streams. So the idea isn't simply to know how much water or the number of your orgasms and things like that, but how might those relate to the quality of your sleep, your caffeine intake. Some algorithms have even been written to analyze the semantic content of your email exchanges or who are you talking to? And it could be that your mood dips at a certain time of the day because that's likely when you'll get a call from your mother. Something like this. The idea is that there's this kind of detective-like quality in quantified self where you're trying to hunt down these clues to things that are not obvious to you by using big data analytics and these gadgets.
You know, that's really kind of fascinating. I mean, it's the kind of thing that people used to go to therapists for, right? To tease out your subconscious motivations and what's really going on in your life and what kind of self-talk are you engaging in and how does that affect your mood? And now it seems like we're doing it with algorithms and data.
As an anthropologist, I think there's more to the difference there because the kind of person that something like a therapeutic or psychoanalytic approach assumes is a person whose psyche you can excavate. It's there to be uncovered and revealed. And this kind of self that is at stake in continuous tracking and big data analysis is quite different. One of the self-trackers I spoke with said, I think of myself as a time series self, where the self unfolds in many little bits over time, and you sort of check in when a sufficient amount of time and data has built up to see what clues might be revealed there.
So I have to say, one of the things that I really value about life is its messiness. I like it that people are chaotic and not rational. I mean, that's part of why we have literature, right? Because we have life stories that are rich and complex. Something about the sense of self you're describing and the kind of tracking seems, you know, seems like it's all about control.
I think quantification, this sort of numerical imagination, is related in interesting ways to messiness and playfulness. Hmm. It doesn't have to be this completely top-down control that sucks the life out of everything. I think it's too easy to dismiss this stuff on those grounds. I had my graduate students take a class I called Self as Data. And in that class, we tried to compare contemporary apps and tracking gadgets with historical precursors. And one really interesting one was Sanctorius in the 1700s. He developed a special, what he called the weighing chair. And he would sit in it as he ate every meal, and it would weigh the sort of insensate perspiration, he called it. So it was very accurate. And as he ate, the chair would actually lower down. You know, it was basically an algorithm that dictated when he had had enough, the chair was too low for him to reach the table. So it's not that different in the way that it was imagined and the way that it functioned from many of the caloric intake weight loss apps that you'll find today on iPhones.
And I suppose the point you're making is that long before digital technology existed, we were doing this. I mean, think about, you know, diary keepers like Ben Franklin, who kept track of just literally everything.
Right. And Ben Franklin wasn't simply a diary writer because he had a special ivory tablet with these 13 columns for these 13 virtues, as he called them, which are very related to the kind of virtues, if we want to use that language, that a lot of this tracking is about today. It was, has he been gluttonous? Did he get to sleep on time? Other things like this. And he would actually have tick off the little boxes every day and then erase it and start again. So many people point to Franklin as one of the first American trackers.
I guess it sounds like what you're saying is that the technology may have changed, but the underlying attitude has been the same for hundreds of years. And the underlying attitude being self-improvement.
Or even to be a sort of ethical, ascetic project of what is it to lead a good life? What this is a long-standing question of how actually to be a better human and lead a good life. I'm not sure that the attitude has remained the same across history, and I'm not sure that the digital doesn't change it in some way when it comes on the scene.
For instance?
Just as one example, I do think that nowadays it's also about a lot of anxiety. How exactly do I manage myself? You know, there's competing expertise out there in the news telling you what to eat, when to sleep. There is already information overload there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are desperate for something to guide them and track them and share the burden of self-regulation. It's self-improvement, but it's also submission. There's a significant degree of submission over to technology and big data analytics.
That's interesting because you're talking about anxiety, and I was thinking, going back to where we began, talking about apps and gadgets that monitor essentially stuff around health and fitness. And I was thinking, yeah, you know, health used to be something you had until you lost it. But with all of these gadgets, it seems like the assumption is that health is something so precarious that you have to constantly be monitoring it.
Yeah, I think this technology accords with a present in which the real health demons are not acute bacterial infections that are sort of invisible and then suddenly they're there and you treat them, but lifestyle diseases, diseases where you have a choice, as I've heard it talked about, diabetes, back pain, all of these things that creep up on you in tiny little bits. And I think it's precisely these lifestyle diseases of modern life that offer themselves as trackable to digital technology.
Well, and no wonder we're terrified. You know, if the message we're getting is that all those tiny little incremental choices we make every day, whether to take the stairs or not, you know, those things are going to kill us. So of course we're anxious.
Right. And we're also anxious because we are living in a consumer society and we are exhorted at every turn of, you know, in the mall or on the street or on our phones as we're riding the bus to consume this, to consume that, eat this, drink this. It is a sort of bombardment. And, you know, I learned a while back about a technology. You can load this app onto your iPhone or your smartphone and go into a supermarket and hold it out up to the labels, scan them, and it will tell you whether this food is safe or where it falls on the sort of yellow to red to green scale. And it's almost like these are little shields. You know, this is this dangerous landscape of temptation inside the supermarket. And we've been reduced to arming ourselves with these little apps to protect ourselves both from the array of products and also from our own desires.
Natasha Dow Schull is a cultural anthropologist at MIT. She's got a book on self-tracking due out next year. It's called Keeping Track.